Meeting to order. For the Pledge of Allegiance, Trustee Hasty, can you please lead us in the pledge? Thank you very much. Next, we have the announcements of action taken in closed session. By a 6 yes to 0 no votes, the board approved the non-economic terms for the new superintendent's proposed contract and to move forward with an offer to enter into a contract of employment. Comments from board members. Trustee Hasty.
Yes, we've had so many changes this year. I'd like to welcome Ms. Pisalia, and I'd like to say thank you and many best wishes for Mr. Cena. Thank you.
Trustee Davis.
None at this time.
Trustee Boom.
Yeah, welcome everybody. Thanks for coming out. It's nice to see a big audience. Appreciate it when people care about what's going on in their school district. So thank you very much for coming. Mr. Cena did a great job with Coach Pappas's memorial on Saturday. Thank you very much, Mr. Cena, and thank you for all your hard work that you've put in as a teacher, administrator, and superintendent in our district. It very much appreciated. So thank you very much for that. And look forward to listening to the comments tonight, and thanks everybody for coming.
Trustee Crawford. Trustee Doug Criddle.
Yeah, I'd like to echo what Mr. Boom said. I'm just thrilled to see some faces and thrilled to hear what you got to say. Thank you very much. That means a lot to all of us and constituents out there. And also I'd like to thank Mr. Cena as well. So welcome.
So I would like to welcome back Ms. Jennifer Pisalia. She's our new chief business official. So welcome, Jennifer. I'd also like to thank all of our parents, all of our employees for what they've done so far this school year to be able to educate our children safely. I also would like to thank Mr. Cena for, this will be his last board meeting. I'd like to thank him for all that he's done for Marysville Joint Unified, and really like to thank him for following the direction of the board on making sure our district follows the guidance as we've moved through this. So thank you, Mr. Cena. Next, we have the opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association. Angela?
Good evening, Mr. Rasmussen and board and all of our audience members. This evening, just want to keep it relatively short and sweet. Want to thank all of the teachers and all of our district employees who are working so hard to keep our school year going. Also want to thank the parents and our amazing students for doing so as well. Like I said, sticking in there with us. Students are amazing in Marysville Joint Unified. I might be partially biased, maybe a little, but they're best students around. We also would like to welcome Jennifer Pisalia back. Welcome. And we also would like to thank Mr. Cena for a lifetime of dedication to Marysville Joint Unified in a whole lot of different roles. So thank you for all of your hard work and your years, your dedication, your passion for our district and our community. Also, again, want to thank the district for the fact that our negotiations continue to be much more collaborative, congenial than last year, and so we look forward to continuing along those lines. We have bargaining again this week. And again, just want to thank everybody for their hard work, and we look forward to continuing on with our school year. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Stiegel. Next, we have Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Dr. Greco?
Thank you for this opportunity to speak tonight. Just wanted to say welcome back. Good to see you. Congratulations on some well-earned rest. This has been a super difficult 2 years, I think in every single way, shape, and form possible. So thank you for everything that you've done while you've been here, Gary. And then from the management team, just kind of one little piece that we wanted to point out tonight. And in having conversations, it's great to see everybody from the community out in here tonight. And I said a couple of weeks ago at our board meeting that this is the best part of America, is everybody has a chance to speak their mind, to listen, to find conversation respectfully in the middle. And I've had lots of conversations along those lines tonight. The one thing I just stress for everybody, as opinions differ on all of this, is just to remember how hard your school staffs are working. Between the added contact tracing and everything else that they're responsible for, they are out there killing themselves to make it work as best they can. So as everyone can, please make sure to give them a thank you. So thank you guys very much.
Thank you. Next, we have the supervisory unit. Public comments. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comment card before the start of the meeting and give it to the secretary, board president, or the superintendent. Regular board meetings, the public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask that they be heard during a specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per board bylaw 9323. The Ralph M. Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. California Government Code Section 549.54.2.A states, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of a legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. So it does look like we have a number of public comment cards. It looks like there's a variety of topics, so I don't think we're going to run into the 20 minutes per topic issue. So I think that as we go through, maybe Mr. Carrion, if we get one particular topic, if you could do an ongoing time, then we could make sure we don't go past that 20 minutes. You do have a clock here, and we have a clock down here, so I would ask you to be cognizant of the time. At the end of the 3 minutes, I will ask you to stop. We did have... So this is actually only our second meeting back and in person. And last time we continued the clock to run for overtime. This time we're gonna make sure Russell's gonna turn it off at the end of our 3 minutes so there's not a confusion if I got 4 seconds left or if I'm 9 seconds over. So we'll just, when it gets to zero, I'm gonna ask you to stop. And if you would do that would help us move along. Okay, our first public comment is Molly McKay. Molly, are you here?
I'm here.
Hi, Molly. If you could state your name for the record and then what your topic is about, that would be helpful.
I'm asking you guys. There we go. Now I can hear me. Okay, so I'm Molly McKay. I have a TK class at Kynoch Elementary School, 26 students enrolled at this time, 26 four-year-olds. And they are the joy of my life. They're so amazing and so challenging, but they're great. Anyway, first I want to tell you that I didn't want to teach in the classroom with masks initially before I mean, way back at the beginning, I did not want to be mask police. I didn't want to have to do that. I just didn't want to. But as it turned out, when we were doing the hybrid system last year, my students who were, again, TK, four-year-olds, had no problem complying with the mask requirement. They were very comfortable. Nobody complained. Nobody fought me, except maybe one autistic kid one time gave a little frustration about it. But most kids are very, very happy to comply. So first I want to tell you that I asked Mr. Morrison this the other day. Why are all of the mitigation protocol calls that we used so successfully when we were doing the hybrid gone, other than the mask mandate? He shrugged his shoulders, but I guess the buck stops here. You guys were who decided what we would do for mitigation protocols this year, right? So I have to tell you that although last year was very stressful and difficult because things kept changing, you know, week by week, and just having to readjust, it was stressful, you know, bring them in, kick them out, bring them back. It was just difficult, but I thought this year was going to be so much better. Boy, was I wrong. Whew, it's actually more stressful because of the lack of those mitigation protocols. We have drinking fountains that were covered last year, and students had their own water bottles. That's gone. So you can imagine with four-year-olds how difficult it is to get them to push the button hard so you get a rainbow shape and drink from the top of the rainbow. I tried for a few days to teach my kids that, but they just want to get down there in that water, and they're not strong enough to push hard enough. And all kids at all ages put their mouth on that thing. I don't know why they're uncovered. That's crazy. And then also eating so close together in the cafeteria, unmasked, of course. And I'm sure probably some of the older kids it's not like this, but with my young students, they just take their mask off and wherever, you know, just throw it down. Sometimes it's getting mixed up with the kid next to them, you know. So, like, that's also really, really, I don't understand why we have to do that. It's just scary to me. And last year, we had social distancing at 6 feet. They reduced it to 3 feet. That was fine.
So, Ms. McKay, that is the end of your time.
Okay,
so
I'll come back next time.
Thank you so much.
You get the message? I want those protocols.
Next, we have our second public comment is Amy Slade. Amy? I do want to apologize. We had some folks here today that were working on our air conditioning system, and I don't think we got it quite fixed yet. Go right ahead, Amy.
Hello, my name is Amy Slade, and I'm here as a voice for MJUSD kids and their families. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you. We as parents would like for you to place on the agenda as soon as possible the removal of COVID testing sites and unnecessary testing for our kids. I have received the COVID handbook and have read it thoroughly. On page 11 and 12, the handbook mentions MJUSD testing sites and clinics. How is this even possible? Last we checked, schools were not medical facilities. What happened to talking about reading, writing, arithmetic, and test scores with our kids? Why is the focus now about positive or negative COVID tests? Shouldn't education be our main concern? We have lost touch with the very basic fundamentals of what a school should look like. On page 7 of the handbook, it lists possible COVID symptoms. And I can tell you right now that my child displays about 6 of the 12 listed symptoms almost daily due to forced masking. It's illogical to associate every symptom to COVID. When did we lose our ability to assess these situations? Many of the symptoms these kids are experiencing is a direct correlation to masking, which, by the way, studies show is ineffective. It's ridiculous to unnecessarily subject these children to invasive testing when there's no logical reason to do so. Before COVID, if a child had a symptom of illness, parents would simply receive a phone call from the office and be asked to pick them up and not return until symptoms subsided. What has happened to that? Why would we as parents allow our children to be subjected to random, unnecessary testing every time an authoritative figure feels the child is displaying a symptom? Last I checked, allergies and the common cold and flu still exist. The ingredients in the swabs themselves contain many dangerous nanoparticles made of silver, aluminum, titanium, glass fibers, ethylene oxide, etc. When they enter the mucous membrane, they cause wounds, which can lead to bleeding, inflammation, and God only knows what else. Just the ethylene oxide alone can cause sore throats, difficulty breathing, blurred vision, dizziness, nausea, headache, convulsions, blisters, all of which can also result in vomiting and severe coughing. Is this something you want shoved up your noses? I doubt it. And doesn't the list of side effects sound familiar? Because they should. It's the same as COVID. I think it is safe to assume that most of you chose to go into education in some capacity due to your genuine love, compassion, and concern for our children and their futures. So why are you all now so willing to turn a blind eye to the reality of what you are allowing to happen? You as board members and faculty have an obligation to protect our children. You have the local control, and it is unfair for higher levels of bureaucracy to require lower levels to enforce things that, one, are not legally enforceable, and two, put you in the direct crosshairs of many families, parents, and local community members. It comes down to this. It is your responsibility as a board to protect the rights of the children, and if that means standing up to the higher
thank
authorities,
you, Ms. Slade. Then that is the what end we of your 3 minutes. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
I do want to say that I think the recognition, the applause is important, but it certainly cuts into the speaker's time. So it however you would like to do that. Our next speaker is Joanna Lasaga. Joanna?
So I'm guessing none of you signed up for this, being at a school board in the middle of a worldwide pandemic. Let's be honest, this has been no easy task for anyone involved, but at the end of the day, it's a position you chose to accept. And your role, first and foremost, is to protect our children. The fact that you're having to do it in these times doesn't lessen your responsibility. If anything, it increases it. Part of the process by which you become a board member includes an oath of office, right? Every single one of you swore an oath to uphold the constitutions of this state and this country in accordance with Title 41 of the state code. And you all know that the constitutions protect our unalienable rights, correct? Article 6, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution, otherwise known as the Supremacy Clause, states that the federal constitution is the supreme law of the land, and any time a state makes a law that contradicts a federal constitution, it is notwithstanding. It's void. How about the Fifth Amendment? The right to due process is not violated. One's rights cannot be taken away without due process. Ninth Amendment? The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. The 14th Amendment? Nor shall any state deprive a person of life, liberty, or property without due process. So where is all this mask mandate stuff coming from? An executive order. The governor claims his authority comes from the Emergency Health Powers Act. Well, this act clearly states the only way a person can be deprived of their rights, even in an emergency, is through due process. Quarantines, vaccines, masks, they cannot be forced. Furthermore, our system was designed with three parts for a reason, so that one part never gets out of control. The executive branch into which the governor is elected cannot make law. Would you say we have an inherent right to breathe fresh air? Do you own the students? Are any of you qualified to diagnose a communicable disease? Do you have consent from any of these parents to force their children to endure medical interventions? So we've established that you don't really know the law, and you don't seem to have the authority, yet your policy, which is very far from anything considered to be law, which is in opposition to the Supremacy Clause and clearly contradicts our God-given rights, protected by the 5th, 9th, and 14th Amendments. On a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you in these orders that you are blindly following? It better be a 10, because every one of you can be held personally liable by each and every one of these parents under Title 42, Section 1983 of Deprivation of Rights under Color of Law and Simulating Legal Process. Depriving children of their rights is a serious crime, and ignorance of the law is no excuse. Your confidence in forcing medical interventions on minor children without written consent of the parents better be a 10, because there are a number of mamas right here who clearly do not consent And since you approve the policies,
thank you very much, Ms. Lasaga, but that is the end of your time. So thank you very much. Next we have is Jennifer Haggard. Jennifer?
Good evening, board, staff, and my fellow parents. My name is Jennifer Haggard. I would like to take a few minutes to ask that we place the mask guidance and agenda on the agenda as soon as possible. We as parents have concerns regarding the mask guidance and wish to be heard. The definition of guidance from the Oxford Dictionary is as follows: advice or information aimed at resolving a problem or difficulty, especially as given by someone in authority. It is not a law. A law is created through the governmental process at a state level through the legislature. Nowhere does it say that MJUSD has to follow CDPH. It is simply a suggestion that the students wear masks. We would like for you to consider removing this guidance. High school is a different time and difficult for the teenagers. It should be a time of enjoyment and education, not a time when schools are discussing masks rather than testing. Acne is a huge issue among blossoming teens, and it is acne or is it bacterial infection? These masks are causing children to break out, their ears are sore, they're being required to wear them in PE, the kids are breathing hard and not getting the adequate amount of oxygen for the development of bodies. Their noses are getting rashes. It is also causing kids to be pit against one another about wearing masks. Another thing we as parents have noticed is the kids are more tired than normal after school because of lack of oxygen during the day. The lack of oxygen is affecting their sleep patterns, their moods, their energy levels, aside from the bacterial infections on their faces. When these young teens need oxygen for their developing brains, you should not be trying to muzzle them. There is more distraction from the students and staff about masks, and it's taking away from their education. I understand that to a degree, MJUSD needs to play the game and follow what the state says for funding. It does not mean that you have to enforce these so-called mandates, because mandates are not laws. Nothing in the Constitution says that we are mandated to do these things to our children. When you stop to think about the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, wearing a mask violates the civil liberties of our children. According to the Dr. Dennis G. Rancourt, PhD, masks and respirators do not work to prevent respiratory influenza-like illnesses. The aerosol particles are too fine to be blocked, and the minimum effect dose is smaller than one aerosol particle. In layman's terms, this means you're trying to stop a mosquito with a chain-link fence. If masks work and you're trying to mandate them, then why are kids who have been wearing masks being removed from school when they've been contact traced for just sitting next to a child that is tested positive? How does any of this make sense? In the freest country in the world, we are now becoming just like communist China. This is something we as parents are urging you to think about and consider. We ask that you please put removal of the mask mandate on the agenda for the next meeting. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Next we have Shauna Wagner. Shauna?
Good evening. My name is Shauna Wagner. I'm here on behalf of my granddaughter and every child who has been forced to play this sinister game for the last 18 months. Common sense should tell you that wearing something that suppresses your immune system, causes you to breathe in carbon dioxide, and is deprived of your oxygen is harmful to anyone, but especially to a developing child. Sadly, common sense seems to be in short supply these days, so here we are. First, let's start with the very basic facts of COVID-19 in children. Children have a 99.995% recovery rate from COVID-19. According to Johns Hopkins, no healthy child ages 0 to 18 has died from COVID-19, and the very few who have, which is less than 450, had severe underlying conditions such as leukemia. Lucky for you, I have 1,000 hours of research under my belt regarding all things COVID. So instead of wasting your time and mine with what should be obvious facts, I put together this 150-page binder for you. Inside, you will find articles, research papers, studies, and interviews with doctors from different fields regarding the harmful effects of mask wearing on adults, but especially children. You will also find helpful websites, charts, graphs, and pictures of a child's brain who was deprived of oxygen. I will also be leaving you with a couple of important documents and a very special book that ensures my freedoms and these children's freedoms rights. It's called the Declaration of Independence. It's called the Constitution of the United States, the Bill of Rights, and more importantly, the Bible. When left in your duty, when left in your hands, it is your duty and your responsibility to protect these children. Now that you've been given a binder full of scientific data that prove masks are harmful to our children's health, it would seem obvious to me that you will strike down this mask mandate immediately. If you choose to ignore the data, then as parents, we have the right to hold you responsible for any damages done to our children, including and especially crimes against humanity. To the parents, you want this crap to end? Pull your children out, start homeschool co-ops, and hit them where it hurts. Pocketbook.
Thank you very much. So next we have Mrs. Lasaga. This is actually an item it looks like you would like to speak to. So what I will do when we get to that item, I will pull that off the consent and then you can talk to it. Is that okay?
Yep.
Next we have Sandra Malo. Sandra?
Hello, board members. My name is Sandra Malo. I'm here on behalf of the children, the parents, the teachers, and concerned citizens. I'm here to speak to you against vaccine mandates. All COVID shots are under emergency use authorization by the FDA. They are experimental trials, and all who take this shot are subject to experimental testing. Even if the Pfizer shot has been FDA approved, it doesn't make it safe. The FDA approves a lot of stuff, namely one, cigarettes. Do you want your children smoking cigarettes? These shots are dangerous. According to vaccine adverse events reporting, 450,000 people have had adverse events to these shots, and these shots have killed more people than all vaccines in the last 30 years. Have you researched what's in this so-called vaccine? Aluminum, known to cause brain damage and linked to Alzheimer's disease. Genetically modified yeast, animal, bacterial, and viral DNA causes genetic mutations. Formaldehyde, known to cause cancer. It's been banned in Europe. It's poison. Human and animal cells, human DNA from aborted babies, pig blood, rabbit brains, dog kidneys, cow hearts, and more. This is linked to childhood leukemia and diabetes. Mercury, one of the most toxic substances known, linked to autoimmune diseases. MSG, polysorbit, known to cause cancer in animals and linked to infertility. Understand that this shot does not meet the definition of a vaccine. It is illegal to mandate it. It is still under experimental trials, and getting this shot goes against a lot of people's religious beliefs. It contains aborted fetal cells. Last I checked, religion was a protected class per federal and state law. You are discriminating. This is a violation of law. And to top this off, in 1986, pharmaceutical manufacturers producing vaccines were freed from all liability resulting from vaccine injury or death. Where is the accountability? Are you willing to assume the liability for killing someone's child or family member because you voted to mandate vaccines? This should be a personal choice between a parent and a child, whether or not they feel that that is right for their family. For teachers and staff at your schools, it should be a personal choice, fully understood and researched what is best for them. There should be no mandates. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Eric Mallow. Eric?
told you I'd be back.
My name's Eric Mallow. Does anybody know what this is right here? It's the Constitution of the United States. You ever read it? You have? So you know that you're in violation of 242, Section 18, right, of the U.S. Code? You're 241, 19. I told you, you guys were in violation of law trying to mandate these masks. You didn't listen. You're listening to Dr. Liu. I've read your guys' new thing that's going to be implemented. And I'm telling you right now, we will file lawsuits. Yeah. And if we don't file lawsuits, we will file affidavits on top of the lawsuits to get rid of you guys. We're done. Parents are not playing around anymore, neither am I. Now, just so you know, I don't have any children anymore. I lost my son when he was 17. And I fought for the freedom of this country, and I'll fight for it again now. You will not do this. You will not mandate it, because you are in violation of the law. Whether you want to play ignorant, you want to play up there, you want to act like masks work or they don't work, here's one thing I got to ask you, a question. Where is the actual scientific data that it all works? Not hearsay, but the scientific data. Let me explain to you. There is none. You don't want to know why? This is a lawsuit right here filed against CDC, against the HOW, to prove the isolation of the COVID virus. You know what they had? Nothing. You know what they said it is? Influenza A and influenza B. That's it. It's the flu. We're calling it COVID. We racked up the numbers. We can look at the data. You can look it up for yourselves if you would like. The deaths per year. They haven't went up. Where's all these deaths at? Right? It's horrible when people die, right? We can all agree to that. It's not a great thing. But the problem is you are not going to violate the constitutional rights of the people anymore. You want to hold the school board? Run the school. Worry about education. Don't worry about who's getting vaccinated. This is not a hospital. You guys are not doctors. And Dr. Liu is not in charge of our health. Period. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I do want to say, I just want to thank everybody for being very respectful of the process, so thank you very much for doing that. Next, we have the superintendent's report. Mr. Cena.
Together, serving every student every day in every way. Throughout human existence, student and teacher interaction and face-to-face connection, that core relationship has been at the heart of teaching and learning. No matter what one's role in the Marysville Joint Unified School District, whether a bus driver, a paraprofessional, a person who works in payroll, a custodian, someone who works in the warehouse, whatever we do, what any of us do is for that purpose, bridging that connection between student and teacher. I want to thank everyone in every role for all that you do to make those connections between student and teacher happen, and for what you do to enhance the experience when that connection is made. For the past 17 months, the COVID experience has presented unprecedented challenge and change. I want to thank everyone, no matter your role, for all your efforts to help slow the spread of the virus, ensure the health and safety of students and staff, maintain that connection between students and teachers, and facilitate student learning by getting students and teachers back to full-time, in-person instruction, and for minimizing the amount of school that students miss. Currently, in Yuba County, the fully vaccinated rate remains around 40%. Case rates are very high, averaging over 70 cases per day for the past 7 days, and the IC units are bursting at 58. Site administration and directors here and throughout the state are consumed with contact tracing, figuring out modified quarantines, figuring how to provide independent study to students who are sick, filling in for absent staff, keeping stakeholders informed, while still trying to serve as instructional leaders. Very soon, a secure link will be available to parents to help school staff with the load of this process.
The district is working on a district-wide testing system to test all 1,200 employees weekly for COVID-19 testing, while permitting staff to be excused from testing by providing verification that they are fully vaccinated per the August 11th governor's executive order. When this process and its timelines are determined, they will be promptly communicated to stakeholders. I would like to congratulate and welcome Jennifer Pasalia for coming back to Marysville Joint Unified to serve in this role, in a crucial role, as the funding mechanisms and the new state laws and mandates and the pandemic, your familiarity and your talent and your relationships with current MJUSD stakeholders is going to prove to be invaluable. I'd also like to congratulate and welcome the new superintendent when we learn who the person is, and MJUSD Board of Trustees. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to serve these past 2 years as superintendent, and thank you for your leadership and support. MJUSD employees, students, and families, thank you for your patience, your trust, and your resilience, working together amid challenging circumstances to help students learn and grow. Wisdom tells us that in life, if we continue to be thankful and put faith in what we most believe in, we will overcome any adversity and challenge. This is true of COVID too. I wish everyone throughout MJUSD the very best of luck in all that you do and pursue toward achieving and realizing a higher state of health, safety, and positive connection, so that everyone can continue to work together to serve every student every day, in every way. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Next, we have the superintendent of the approval of the minutes. The first two can be done by one motion. The minutes from the special board meeting of 8/7/21. And the minutes from the special board meeting of 8/8/21. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? Is there a motion?
Move to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Hasty. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any nays? Motion carries, 6 yes. Next, we have the minutes from the regular board meeting of 8/10/21. Absent was Jeff Boom and Frank Crawford. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
I have a motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second? Second by Trustee Hasty. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. So it looks like we had 3 ayes. Do we have any nays?
Abstain.
Do we have any abstentions?
Abstain.
We have an abstention by Trustee Boom and Trustee Crawford. We have the minutes from the special board meeting of 8/17/21. Absent was Frank Crawford. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Boom. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Criddle, Doug Criddle. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any nays?
Abstain.
Any abstentions? One abstention by Trustee.
Abstain.
We need to utilize our microphones if we can, folks.
Abstain.
Okay, abstention by Trustee Crawford.
Did you hear me?
Next, we have the consent agenda. I will be pulling the item number 1 on page 3, field trip approvals. Are there any other items that board members would like to have pulled? If not, is there a motion? I will entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
We have a motion to approve the rest of the consent agenda. Is there by Mr. Crawford? Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries, 6 yes. Next we have, you can come on up, Ms. Lasaga. Next we have the field trip approvals. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the following field trips. A, Marysville High School FFA, Willows High School in Willows, California on 9/18/21 and 9/19/21. 7 MHS students and 1 MHS staff member. And B, we have Marysville High School FFA, FFA National Convention in Indianapolis, Indiana on 10/25 through 10/31. 20 MHS students and 2 MHS staff members. So again, Ms. Lasaga, you will have your 3 minutes for this, so thank you.
So I get 3 minutes?
3 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would just ask that you approve this. The Willows one is for the leadership team, and then my daughter happens to be the sectional or the regional president, and she actually is one of the members putting on that training for the other kids. Marysville in the last, I think, 6 years has not done it. They have not attended this particular event. I think it's time that Marysville start approving some of these field trips for these kids so that Marysville, the ag program itself is recognized. We're in a rural area, and the program itself needs to be recognized. And then when you go to the national, it says 20. They just give you a lump number of 20. There may be 22. And do you really want to turn away 22? So give them the approval to say, however many students can go to a national. We've got 2 from Marysville that qualified in their proficiencies. Wouldn't we want to be recognized? And then Jade, she's a delegate from the state. You finally have a delegate for the state to be able to go. There should be no question. And any of these FFA field trips and competitions and everything, they are phenomenal. They are producing kids that are off the hook, going to be our next leaders of tomorrow. And I would just say, let them go. Let them open the door and let these kids represent Marysville the way it should be. They're phenomenal. And you guys should have, when they're doing their speaking competitions, invite them in and have them do it in front of you. You'll be amazed at the products that they are producing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sander. I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Boom.
Second.
Second. Second by Trustee Crawford. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Opposed. Motion. No.
Mr. Crawford is no.
That's correct.
I thought you were the second.
No,
Mr.
sir.
Robert. Mr. Criddle? Oh, okay. Is your microphone on, Trustee Criddle? The little green light showing?
It was, and I turned it off after I said second.
Okay, so that's much better now. So my apologies. So the second was Trustee Doug Criddle. Frank Crawford voted no, and we had 5 yes. Sorry for the confusion. Next, we have the new business, Board of Trustees, the employment contract with the new superintendent. The purpose of the agenda item, the board will deliberate upon the set compensation to be offered to the selected superintendent candidate. The board will determine whether to enter into a proposed contract with a new superintendent. If approved, the board will announce the name of the new superintendent. So with that, if we're talking about the compensation, the district negotiating team proposes an annual compensation for the new superintendent to be $230,000. As you heard earlier, in the economic terms of the contract have been approved in closed session tonight. Is there any discussion regarding the compensation of the new superintendent? I make a motion to approve the compensation of $230,000 and to enter into the proposed contract with the new superintendent. Is there a second?
Second.
Yeah.
Was that Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Doug Criddle. We're going to do a roll call vote. Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
That was a yes?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Yes, motion carries, six yes. The board would like to introduce Dr. Fall Azarani as our new Marysville Joint Unified School District Superintendent. Let's all give her a big welcome. Dr. Azarani, would you like to address the audience? Come forward, please.
Or I can just use a mic. Good evening. Thank you so much. I'm just so excited to be part of this community and this school district. I see such wonderful work being done by our teachers and our staff, and I'm just excited to dig in and be part of the team. So thank you. I'm just excited to be here. Thank you. And my husband is here with me at the end, sitting at the back. We hope to become part of the Marysville community very soon. So thank you again.
Thank you very much, Dr. Verana. Next, we have Buildings and Grounds Department. Resolution 2021-22/06, directing compliance with requirements of Title 24, Part 1, Section 4-310, authorizing exemption from DSA review of the solar installation and electrical infrastructure for the district's MOT bus yard. The purpose of the agenda item is request the board approve the resolution authorizing exemption from DSA, review of solar installation and electrical infrastructure for the district's maintenance, operation, and transportation, MOT bus yard. So what it looks like on that particular one is if we have an area that is going to be accessible to students and public, then we can get it exempt from DSA. I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Hasty. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries, six yes. Number two, Resolution 2021-22/07, directing compliance with requirements of Title 24, Part 1, Section 4-310, authorizing exemption from the DSA review, ground mount solar installations and electrical infrastructure for the district's Lyndhurst Agricultural Maintenance Facility. Purpose of the agenda item is request the board approve the resolution authorizing exemption from DSA review of ground mount solar insulation and electrical infrastructure for the district's Lyndhurst Agricultural Maintenance Facility. Very similar to item one. I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries, six yes. Next item, number three, energy efficiency project with SiteLogic. The purpose of the agenda item is to provide the board with an energy efficiency project update. This is an informational item only. Informational item only. Mr. Cena.
Thank you, President Rasmussen. Tonight, I'd like to introduce Jennifer Butler, Facility Solutions Specialist, Mike Rubino, the Senior Project Manager, and Rebecca Gladden, Energy Engineering Supervisor. Tonight, I'm going to give the board an update of SiteLogic's project on the energy efficient
energy efficiency project. Once we get the present, you have a copy, or you should have a copy of the presentation, and we should be able to provide it real soon.
Hey, don't sit beside me like
Paper copies? Oh, look at you. You don't need me. All right, I think we have it now anyway. Thank you so much. Yeah, I'll use it. Yeah, sure. Thanks. Okay, well, as I was saying, you all look very different in person. You all look very different in person, except for the masks. My name is Jennifer Butler. I'm with SiteLogic, if you haven't met me yet. And tonight, we're just going to be doing a brief presentation on an update of our energy services program that we're currently in the process of doing. Is that okay? Okay. So with me tonight is Mike Rubino, who's the district's project manager with SiteLogic, and Rebecca Gladden, who is leads our energy engineering department. And so Mike is here to answer any questions I might not be able to, and Rebecca will be giving a brief presentation on your dashboard. So I just wanted to remind the district of our guiding principles and our goal of why we're here and why we're doing the work that we're doing. And that's to revitalize, optimize, and construct a healthy, safe, and productive learning environment for the students and staff. So to date, this is 2 weeks past when I sent it in, so some of the things are already out of date, but we are substantially complete with the lighting installation and working on the punch list now to finish off any loose ends. But there have been over 7,000 new LED fixtures installed district-wide, and the improvements, I've asked for some better before and after pictures, which we'll show you next quarter, but it's really incredible. But here's a couple of after photos for you to consider. The lighting has gone from a pale yellow to a bright white. We are also probably about 95% complete right now with the installation of the bipolar ionization. This is, as you can imagine, become an even greater demand right now because of the Delta strand. So we are pushing extra hard to get 100% complete as soon as possible in the next month or so. And we'll give you an update when that's happened. I wanted to point out the really painful spot of Lyndhurst's mechanical system. Prior to the beginning of the project, it has been brought online now in June, and service admin staff and the demolition phase is, I think, complete, right? Complete, yes. But if I could just draw your attention to the picture in the bottom right-hand side, just to give you some idea of the kind of breadth of this project. If you notice, it's kind of blurry, but in the before picture, it has a person standing there, and you can see their size. So here is the after photo after all the systems have been pulled off that chilled water loop. So a very beautiful representation of the hard work that's been going on and has been happening very quickly. Certainly a great, great effort by the district to improve the air quality for that high school. I actually get the chills, so that's wonderful. So there are BARD units that have been installed. As of 2 weeks ago, there were 63 left, but I'm guessing that that number is probably half at this time. These have been going very, very well, and the rooftop units at Foothills has also been replaced. So just a little bit different before and after. It's pretty incredible, and I love to see it. Simultaneously, if you haven't heard, I know most of the admin has, all the thermostats, the environmental control thermostats in the classrooms and different staff areas have been replaced, and that the programming and commissioning component of that is in progress. We have had some expected discomfort with a brand new system, but we ourselves, combined with the MGUSD staff, have been very proactive in responding to those complaints and concerns and trying to get everyone educated and up to speed, especially understanding how it benefits them today and in the long run. So we are currently working on the solar installation. Two of the resolutions you just passed help us get that process done with some exemptions, and will expedite the process. So as of today, six of the solar sites have been submitted for DSA approval, and in September we will continue with the bus barn and Lyndhurst High School. So now I'm going to take a little break and hand it over to Rebecca Gladden so she can show you our progress on the district's dashboard.
Go ahead. Thank you, Jennifer. I'm going to need to redirect real quick. I need the web browser to pop up on the side. Sometimes she has to exit out of the PowerPoint to get it up. There we go. Should there's the link right Perfect, thank you. And then I might need help getting the PowerPoint back up. Thank you. Perfect. All right, good evening. Thank you. Sorry for that second bit. So I want to walk you through what we currently have for your energy dashboard. That's going to be a very nice, handy, valuable tool for tracking this ongoing savings performance as the rest of these energy measures get installed. I'm going to give you a rundown of what you're looking at here and how to use it. It's pretty neat. I get excited about this stuff. It's interactive. We want to also make sure community, teachers, students get involved in this too, seeing what's happening at their schools and the progress that's happening as it's going around. So this will be really easy to integrate and share with all others too. And we're always trying to make this more user-friendly. So if anybody has feedback, we're always open ears for that. So what you're seeing right now is your just general usage overview of all of electricity usage going back to the 2018-19 fiscal year. So we have that tracked monthly up top, and by fiscal year down on the bottom left-hand corner, fiscal year totals. So this is gonna be beautiful to watch as the next fiscal year comes around and these other measures are installed, and we're going to be seeing a significant reduction in your electricity usage. And especially as solar comes online, we're going to see the impact that solar plays with how much energy, electricity you're consuming, what portion of that is coming from your solar panels. So we also have the electric cost added on here, which again, you can see just over time, that's been increasing just because the utility rates have been going up. So this will be really nice to see drop, especially as solar comes online. The lighting is going to make a significant difference right off the bat as well as those months. This gets updated in the next few months, but the solar is going to be a huge, tremendous impact on this cost here. There's a couple other slides, pages here I want to show you, which will be handy when comparing schools against each other, essentially kind of an apples to apples comparison here, measuring usage in dollars by square footage, trying to make everybody kind of a uniform playing field here. It'll be interesting to see what progress is being made at different schools. This comparison table is interesting here because it's another just tabular view of some of the other pages I showed, a nice synopsis of sites, the usage, the cost, what that utility rate is right now. You're going to see that yellow column essentially going significantly down as solar comes online, because you're going to be getting a lot of your electricity from your solar instead of PG&E, which is going to help make your costs much more affordable. This EUI map feature is pretty neat, where you can actually see a map view layout of the district and kind of get a better idea of the breadth of the district we're dealing with here, which is pretty interesting. Those nice rural sites out there in Brownsville. Hovering over them, you can see what the actual site name is and click on it and get a bit more data to the right updates to that specific site. So some nice interactive features looking at the map there and the different sites. Carbon footprint will be a nice feature to track here, is our environmental impact is tracked with these energy efficiency measures coming online. This will be really nice to watch and compare. You can always go back on all these pages to the previous years. So really tracking the impact from previous to current as we go forward on these. And then the nice synopsis of energy savings to date, just based on we're using the 18-19 fiscal year as a baseline, essentially, and comparing everything to that. And it's a better representation right now with how the last year and a half or so have gone with the variable usage. It's just a better year right now in terms of normal occupancy and energy usage there. So it's a good comparison. We are going to be bringing on water and natural gas as well. So this will not be just electricity usage. There's a lot of data to sift through, so we're still organizing it, reviewing it, combing through it with the fine-tooth comb, making sure everything's accurate, and water and natural gas will be added on here soon as well. So I'm really excited as this continues to grow and we add more data onto here, watching the impact. So I'll switch back to the PowerPoint. If I can do that. Just fast forward. Thank you. I'm going to skip back to where we were. Okay, so one last slide before I wrap up. I want to bring this back to the students. It's my favorite part about what we do and the whole purpose of this, making your sites more resilient, safer, more efficient here. The lights, this is all in efforts to help make more comfortable, conducive learning environments, and we want to bring the students as much as possible, exposing them to what's happening out there in the industry, what we're doing and why, and engineering, STEM, a lot of different trades and career major pathways are going to be involved and a part of this. So there's a lot of creative opportunity here. And we have some things already ready to go, some really fun interactive internships, curriculum, programs. But we love collaborating and brainstorming with each of our districts as well. If there's a specific program or topic you want to hit on, we want to know about that. We want to make this as easy and fun as possible for the students. So I'm really excited. When the timing is right, we're working with Jody Larson on this with the district. She's been our really amazing liaison right now. Which schools might be good to start this with? And the timing, of course, is everything, too. We know everybody has a lot on their plates, especially the teachers. So we want to make this more of a fun thing and not so much of a burden. Definitely. So this is really exciting things to come around the corner. And with that, I'll give it back to Jennifer.
Thank you. And in conjunction with the student engagement components in student education, We also are embarking on our community engagement component, also with the help of Jamie Larson, who has been just amazing cohort for us, and with your new director of communications, I think, I'm not sure her title, but Courtney, I think it, yeah. They've been really great. But so we're planning now for a 3-day green boot camp for the staff, of which they'll have 3 days of curriculum for themselves, which will make super fun, but well, they'll also be able to start to try hands-on some of the things that we're going to be teaching the students and incorporating into the campuses. So lots of really great fun stuff to be had, and thank you for providing such good team members. So before I go to this slide, which is probably the best slide because we're going to talk about on time and on budget, how great is that? Just a quick moment to acknowledge some people who are actually in and not in the room, but a special acknowledgement for Travis Barnett, Mr. Barnett, and his assistant, Summer. We had a recent meeting, internal meeting, and I just want to let you know that my entire company that was at this meeting was using Marysville as their example of the type of partner that they like to work with. There were compliments from teachers to staff, but in particular, Mr. Barnett and his team. And then, of course, Ms. Lossing, who isn't here, and Mr. Cena for having a really an incredible vision for the district and bringing that forward for this board to approve. This really will be a legacy project for you, and we're really pleased and happy to be a part of it. And a special thanks to those people who have been so helpful along the way. So the good news is that we are on time and on budget, so challenge accepted. We have been mobilizing like crazy people, and we are continuing to make unparalleled progress. And again, a lot of that has to do with the team that you have in place. Having that type of leadership is key to a successful outcome. And so lastly, just a big thanks to Mr. Barnett and Ms. Lossing for having the foresight to make sure that we had the surplus funds of $1,049,573 for our set aside for our inspector of record and DSA fees and et cetera, and other project needs. That was great foresight. I realized they worked with their legal team and financial advisor on that, but that's really helping. So thank you, everyone. This is hopefully just one of a quarterly report that we bring to you, and we anticipate that it'll be positive news every time, and that hopefully soon we'll have the kids in here and they could be giving you an update. So unless there's questions, which I'm happy to answer.
Questions, board members?
Yeah, I wanted to say thank you very much, Jennifer, for having actually being the stakeholder partner that we want as well. That's very important to the community and how we're moving forward with partnerships, and you articulated that perfectly. Okay. Also, congratulations on being on time and on budget. And it's exciting to hear you're working with Mrs. Larson on integrating some curriculum into our. This is about students.
It is.
It is about students, not only having them, giving them the right environment, but giving them the knowledge that where this environment comes from. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much.
I would also like to say thank you to Jennifer and Rebecca for our presentation tonight. Mm-hmm. I do have one question for you. It's on page 12, I guess, and it has to do with our solar fields. And I don't notice Foothill Intermediate in the lineup yet for trying to get, and it seemed like Foothill was one of our schools that has one of the greatest needs. Just wondering when they might get in the ball game.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for bringing that up. The great news is that the district did select PBK for their master facility planning, And in that process, it was discovered that there might be some critical changes to the way that the school site is set. So rather than immediately putting in into a placement where we would potentially have to move it and it wasn't a good fit, we decided to wait for PPK to do their analysis and then collaborate on the best location. So as soon as that's been done, and I think that's in progress from what I understand, we'll collaborate with them and make sure that we're putting it in the place that's going to be long-term and best served.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Any others? Okay, thank you very much, Jennifer.
Great. Thank you so much. It's good to see you all.
Our next item, item number four, Foothill Intermediate School Feasibility Study Update with Dixon Smart Schoolhouse. The purpose of the agenda item is to inform the board that the study has been completed and data collected for the facility feasibility study at Foothill Intermediate School. Mr. Dixon.
Thank you, board, superintendent, cabinet, and audience. Thanks for the opportunity to work with Marysville, both at Covalod and now at Foothill. It's an interesting district in many ways, Marysville, as I traveled around with Travis Barnett and Penny when she was here. The size of your district's incredible. I mean, geographically, it's huge. And some of the challenges that presents is difficult to really get your hands around sometimes. But let's get to Foothill. I put together just a short PowerPoint. Can I just advance this? So while they're trying to find it, I think tonight what I would like to get from the board is a little more direction on what you'd like to see at Foothill. It has some challenges. It has some great opportunities. I have some ideas for the board. But getting your input, I think, would really help me to develop what you're looking for that school site.
I would just say, Mr. Dixon, this is it's an informational item. Okay. So really, I think we need to gather information that you're going to give us, and then we'll need to chew on that a little bit to try to make some decisions.
That's fine. Thank you.
No. While we're waiting, also, could I? Is this young lady right? Are you by chance from the newspaper? Well, before you leave, could you please take a picture of our new superintendent back there? Thank you very much.
Let me. I can get my computer and go over a copy of it. Do you want? I have it on my computer. Yeah. No, I can get one.
Also, I would say for our newspaper reporter, if you could give me your card or something, when I get home, we do have a news release that I could probably forward that to you. Probably questions Mr. Dixon should be able to answer tonight. Yeah.
Hey, Joe. Sorry. Hey, welcome back, by the way. I'm over here. Yeah. Good to see you again. I had a question. If we have any questions on this site survey, can we contact you, or do we go through Travis, or what's your procedure?
I'm open.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
I guess I would say, Mr. Criddle, or Trustee Criddle, if we have questions tonight on the item, it would probably be directed directly to Mr. Dixon. I think if you have further questions with our protocols that we have, they actually go through the superintendent. So I think it would be best to direct those to the superintendent, and then the staff could respond.
Just your arrow,
okay,
please.
Thank you. So I was able to go out to the site on August 9th, and the staff was there. They're getting ready for the opening of school. The principal was at the elementary site, where we also stopped in and had a chance to speak with her about Foothill as well. As you know, she's new to that school, so she didn't have a lot of the background information, but she did provide some input, which was very, very nice. First, when you drive up, I think we could all agree that there is a lack of curb appeal to that site. There's a septic system at the site that runs underground and out to the field, which would impact any type of planning that we do. Obviously, you can't build over a septic system. There's a big dirt parking lot right next to the site on the right side. The field was in really good shape. It had just been renovated, according to Mr. Barnett, and that looked really nice. There is an elevation change on the site, which could create some access compliance issues. And we talked a little bit about the County Office of Ed has a facility right next door, and there could be some opportunities to work with the County Office of Ed on some projects as well. When you walk into the school, well, let me back up. It was reported, and I haven't seen anything on this, that there is naturally occurring asbestos on the site. In this part of California, that seems to be a probable condition that you have. I know, working with other schools and architects and engineers, you can mitigate when you're building over NOA, naturally occurring asbestos, but you have to come up with a plan. You have to have a soils engineer develop a plan. You typically have to monitor it, and the Department of Toxic Substance Control gets involved with that as well. That can add some costs, obviously, and some time. So when you walk into the school, the administration office is really small, and it's right there in front, and there's no real single point of entry condition there that we all like to see in schools. So because it's so small, social distancing, if that's going to be something going forward, it's just not possible. In the 70s and 80s, it seems, there were a lot of schools built with these demountable wall systems. They're panels that you put into the floor and you hang up on rails that go around the school. And I suppose the idea was to be able to create flexible conditions in schools. I can tell you most schools have gotten rid of demountable walls. They either become non-functional or unsafe. Your demountable wall system right now at Foothill is fixed. It's not going anywhere. It's been screwed together. It's been set in place. So it's not really demountable anymore. Egress, when schools were built 50 years ago, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, heck, even 5 years ago, the codes were different. And typically you're grandfathered into it the year it was designed and approved, and you are there. But there are exiting issues at the site now, at the school. For one thing, now you can't exit from one classroom through another classroom to get outside. It has to be from a classroom to a protected corridor to get outside. The kitchen and multipurpose room are really functional, really nice spaces. There does seem to be a lack of necessary core facilities, especially restrooms. You have a small population there, 220 average over the past 4 years. So you're within code, plumbing code, but it just seemed like the lack of restrooms was an obvious condition, and we did hear about it from the staff at the school. Also, I took some photos and noticed there's some ceiling tiles that are stained, which would indicate probably a roof leak, since you don't have a water source HVAC system. There's no emergency lighting, and as the staff indicated, when the power goes off, it can get really dark in there. The VCT, the vinyl composition tile, in the multi-purpose room, I would suggest upgrading to something that is less maintenance intensive. This is the kind of tile where the custodial staff has to strip and wax and constantly mop, and it just has a lot of maintenance needs. So you could upgrade that to a higher grade vinyl that a lot of schools are doing now. And there's a lack of natural lighting, not just windows, but there's a lot of rooms, classrooms that are landlocked, if you will. And there are ways to improve that as well without windows. There could be some type of solar lighting coming down from the roof. And, you know, some of these things, like the lighting, it's so important. Natural lighting has been shown to improve student achievement. To bring that into schools to help the kids to achieve better. So we went over the findings and some of the recommendations that I'll show you in a minute with Mr. Barnett. We had to do some verification of the information. I received the as-built plans from PBK, the architects. And we've been researching the NOA issue at the site, and it's just going to be really key to have a soils engineer analyze that for us. Mr. Barnett's looking for the report. He indicated it came prior to him working here, so he might have a difficult time finding it, but we need to get our hands on that. And then Mr. Barnett and the business office can come to the board and make a recommendation to either hire a soils engineer or not. Some of the ideas that we talked about was to create the curb appeal. Really, the elevation of the current school and the way it looks, it'd be really difficult to improve that significantly. And we need some better core facilities, admin area, multimedia area, more restrooms. We thought it might be a really good idea to put a 6,000 square foot building, maybe a little bit less at the max, 6,000 square foot building in the front of the school. And then create between the new building and the existing school a nice courtyard, a covered walkway from the new building to the existing building. And it doesn't have to look like that. This is the one I pulled up from some architect plans that I'd done previously at schools. But something along that would really make the school pop. A brand new building up front, that's what you see, for the core facilities. Then we would have to take the existing facilities and modernize it. And that would be taking down all the demountable walls, putting up permanent walls, configuring it, you know, with classrooms with exiting that meets current code, putting in a solid tube or some type of solar lighting for the interior classrooms to provide natural lighting. And then looking to the bottom of that photo, that aerial, there's a ditch that goes in there. You know, we'd recommend putting a pipe in there and filling that in, making it flat, and using all that space as parking, including for the buses that perhaps Mr. Barnett indicated that you leave there at least one bus because of the logistics of the district. But there's a lot of opportunity is the point here, and we need to come up with some more ideas on what we could use that space for over to the right side. The key here would be, of course, a new building. Now, how do you pay for it? Like what we like to say in our cash pro or our Leadership Academy program is money's the muscle. You have to have money to do all these things. Well, we are unfortunate that it took a pandemic to get it, but fortunate to get federal money, significant federal money that can be used for facilities. And so that could be one source. Also, you do qualify under the State School Facility Program for approximately $1.5 million in modernization funds for Foothill. Now, Prop 51, the current bond, is exhausted, so to speak. Assemblymember O'Donnell's bill, AB 75, has gone through the Assembly, has gone through the Senate. The Assembly and Senate need to get together, conference committee, and work that thing out, but it's a $9 billion state bond with pretty much the same funding formulas that we have in place now. So that looks pretty good. That's probably going to be on the ballot in November of 22. There is some talk of June of 22, but the smart people that I know in Sacramento are saying it's probably going to be November of 22. So the recommendations, and I know this isn't an action item, but continue to look into this NOA issue. And again, working with the business office, if we find that there has been NOA discovered there previously, you're going to move forward any kind of new construction, you're going to have to hire a soils engineer. If we do find that there is NOA, the state has under the State School Facility Program a facility hardship. The beauty of facility hardship is it goes to the very top of the list. If you qualify for facility hardship. Prop 51, in fact, if we had a facility hardship, we're not going to be able to move this fast, but if we turned one in by October of this year, we would get Prop 51 money. That's because it goes, again, to the very top of the list. So you get funded right away. If you want to utilize ESSER funds, as you probably know, ESSER 3, the America Rescue Plan Act requires an expenditure plan adopted by the board by the end of October. So you would have to have whatever we're going to spend at this school, if you're using ESSER 3, in that plan. We need to notify the California Department of Education of the project and the goals of the project. It's always good to let CDE, OPSC, Office of Public School Construction, and Division of State Architect know ahead of time what we're thinking about doing if and when the board wants to move forward. And then I've always advocated for joint use with county offices in other agencies, cities. I think you're serving the same constituency for the most part, and there could be opportunities to work with the Yuba County Office of Ed on their property and your property to combine the two properties, combine a project. I think it's just worth exploring. So I'd recommend that we do that. And that is it. Thank you.
Joe, I might be able to give you a little bit of clarification. Jennifer maybe remembers when we did these soil tests up there. We were actually given the land to build a new school up there at a different site. And when they looked into the site and there was so much natural occurring asbestos that it was going to cost us like three times more to mitigate the ground than it was to build the site. So, I mean, it was just something we couldn't do. It was just going to cost us but I don't remember if we did an actual analysis at the Foothill School or not, but I remember we did one on that other site, but that was back when Mark was here, so it could be something that's possibly in your office. But I remember the cost of mitigating the ground was just millions and millions, way above the cost of building the site.
Yeah, typically it's an over X, then you have to haul it to some other place. I think it's down in Kern County somewhere, and it is very expensive.
So is there a difference if you're going to build on a new site versus building on an existing site? Are the laws different?
Not the laws. The opportunities to encapsulate NOA on an existing site are different than building totally new on a native soil situation. But I don't know. We have to get our hands on that report. I'm speculating. But, for example, I'm helping, I think I mentioned the first time I introduced myself to the board, I'm helping Berry Creek rebuild their school. And the Butte County Office of Ed indicated they had NOA up there. FEMA OES indicated they were able to encapsulate the NOA in that area. So I want to, we're working on getting that report from OES now. I want to see what that looks like and talk to DTSC, Department of Toxic Substance Control, if we can do the same thing, we being Marysville and Berry Creek, if we can do that, saves a lot of money. Encapsulate with paving or concrete.
Every place we looked up there had asbestos. Every site that we looked at, there were several of them, and they all had asbestos. We had to get way up the hill, clear, 15 miles further up the hill before we got out of it.
Wow. So. Yeah.
Did you have any investigation on what it would take to refurbish the old building? Do you have any ideas of that?
I had difficulty hearing. To refurbish the existing school?
Yeah, to remodel, update, make it more usable.
When we start developing budgets for modernization, we like to look at a per square footage cost. Assuming 25,000 square feet of the permanent building at $200 a square foot, it'd probably be in that range. I mean, escalation right now, as you all know, is crazy. But I believe if we talk to your architect and your contractors, I think that's still what we're using, $200 a square foot.
And the second question, I understand they are using bottled water up there, that since the well has, something has happened.
Correct. That's what Travis told me as well. There's copper and some other mineral in the water. And thank you for bringing that up, because I need to include it in my report. So the Infrastructure Act, for lack of better terms, it says lead, you know, to mitigate lead in water. I'm on a monthly call with our Washington, D.C., lobbyists, for lack of a better term. And we believe that that also would include other minerals and other, you know, things in water besides lead. And it's a pretty significant amount of money. I don't remember the exact amount, but those are the kinds of opportunities that we need to jump on right away to see if we can use that money to take care of that problem. But I don't know how, you would know better than me. It's well water, from what I've heard. I don't know if there's any water in the ground that's different than that up there. And so I don't know how you'd mitigate it. I don't know. Somebody smarter than me is going to have to figure that one out. But we could probably go after some money for that problem.
Yep. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? I would just like to say this is really some exciting times. I wish some of our audience could stay to see this. Some of our upgrades in our facilities, we're going to start our 2022, our BOGA expansion is going to be ready for students. And then the Covalot refurbished area, we're getting ready to start working on that. And then if we can do something here at Foothill, What exciting times for trying to do better for our staff and our students. So, any other comments or questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Dixon. That was our last item on the agenda. Meeting adjourned.